Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
Where does Tennessee rank in the pecking order right now among teams, not just in the country, but in the SEC?
Well, it's a program, Chris, that, you know, thinks of itself better than it is. It doesn't compete for championships. It last won one in 1998. They won the first BCS title. They're not in an orbit with Georgia, Florida, in their division, certainly not Alabama. And I would say Texas A&M, LSU from the other side. So it has a great history, but it doesn't have a great program right now. That's not to say they can't get it back. But now you're looking at spending money to hire a new coach, new staff, trying to compete, paying all that money, and trying to get relevant in the SEC, and that's just not going to happen anytime
soon. So you heard Dennis Dodd at the top of our open with CBS Sports speak to the Tennessee Volunteers job. Jeremy Pruitt was let go yesterday. Philip Fulmer retired. There is a lot of smoke coming out of Knoxville right now. We'll get to that. Another honor was given to Jalen Catalon yesterday, something we'll talk with Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, more in depth about. There's a really good piece from our buddy Connor O'Gara at Saturday Down South talking about the buyouts in the Southeastern Conference, how much money these schools have spent since 2007 and Nick Saban arrived in the league. When you think about the league, where does Arkansas rank in the pecking order of jobs? Where does Tennessee? That's something we'll get to, as well as an update on Kansas City quarterback Patrick Mahomes. A couple sources out of Kansas City sharing what they've been hearing when it comes to the best quarterback in the National Football League.
Later on in the show, Bruce Stanton, general manager and vice president of Pradco Fishing, is going to join us. He's from the Knoxville area. That's where he originally grew up. He's been in Fort Smith for 25 years, but big Vols fan, big Tennessee guy. I'm interested to hear some of his takes as someone that really follows that program. He'll be with us in hour two. And this was not surprising news, what happened yesterday, but very interesting news. I still think the timing of it's interesting, being, you know, mid to late January, and you're making a transition in your program like this.
Tennessee's already lost a couple of commitments. They better figure out what they're doing quick, or it could be trouble brewing in Knoxville. So where are we going?
Oh, let's start here with Tennessee. I mean, I think this is the biggest news because while Tennessee is no longer a school you play every year, it is a school you played this year. You kind of wish in some ways you did still play Tennessee on an annual basis as an Eastern Division opponent, but you got Missouri now. But there's always such a great rivalry. But Tennessee, for all the lack of success over the last 20 years at the highest levels in the Eastern Division, is still one of the, I think, one of the blue bloods of the East and of the Southeastern Conference, and still one of the names that when you think about Southeastern Conference football, while Alabama stole a lot of the spotlight, Tennessee's still at the roots of this league. I mean, so this is a major program. It's a big story yesterday.
So I'll ask you, and to Dennis Dodd's point, they haven't been to an SEC championship since 2007, haven't been to a national championship since 98.
Right.
When does the blue blood title dwindle? When does it no longer exist? Because it's on the fringe right now for Vols, and Vols fans may be frustrated and irritated by that, but when you look at reality, when you take a step back, when you think about the lack of success they've had pretty much the last 13 years, when does that no longer become the case?
That's a good question, because they're not even really getting close. And you're right, at some point that label or tag fades away, but it's, you can't tell the story or the history of this league and its success, particularly since Arkansas joined it in 92, the last 30 years of this league, without telling the story of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're central to the historical aspect of the league in the modern era. And for me, the modern era is since 92, when Roy Kramer created the two divisions, brought Arkansas and South Carolina in, and Tennessee and Florida were the teams to beat in the East, and really the teams to beat in the conference. We forget about it because Alabama's had so much success. There was a good period of time where Tennessee and Florida were the schools in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And that has dissipated quite a bit over the last 15 years.
I imagine Knoxville Sports Radio is wild. We got a chance to talk with Eric Ainge, former Tennessee quarterback, a couple months ago. We're going to have John Reed join us at 8 o'clock this morning. He does radio for Fox Sports Knoxville in the middays. And I wonder the expectation, because I know a Tennessee fan or two. I know Craig and Deere is kind of our residential Tennessee fan. You brought up Bruce Dan, who's going to be joining us at about 7:20 this morning. And I wonder how much it's fallen, because at one point in time, Arkansas was also a blue blood program in college football. When did that dissipate?
When did 80s? Arkansas? Yeah. I think it dissipated when Arkansas joined the SEC. You say Arkansas won back-to-back Southwest Conference titles in 88 and 89.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Arkansas was as good as there was in the country in the 60s and parts of the 70s, not as much in the 80s. I mean, when you have the seasons like Arkansas had in the early 90s, when you lose to the Citadel, the house of cards comes crashing down quickly.
Relatively quickly. Cool.
Yeah. So, but for me, I'd like to ask Bruce this and get his opinion on this. To me, one thing that made Tennessee so special and gave them that edge is they were the only place that had the 100,000 seat stadium for a long time. And now all these other schools have caught up and have 90-something thousand, 100-something thousand
big
seats.
Big House, Horseshoe.
Exactly. But
Penn State.
In the SEC, they were the, as far as capacity, Neyland Stadium was kind of the crown jewel of the Southeastern Conference. Well, that's long since been gone, you know, and LSU, Alabama, Auburn, all these other schools have expanded their stadiums to be 90,000 plus. So Tennessee doesn't have near the edge that it once had, where you can come to Tennessee and play in front of 100,000. Well, that just doesn't have the edge it once had.
You think about Tennessee this past season, winning the last six games, winning 7 of 8. They started out rocky, lost to Georgia State at home. Then all of a sudden you get to this season, and there's really a fork in the road when Arkansas takes on Tennessee. You have two programs trending in the opposite direction, and it almost felt like Kentucky and Auburn, you know, Chizik lost to Arkansas, got let go. Mm-hmm. Was it Joker Phillips, who's the head coach of Kentucky?
That's right.
You know, Arkansas was kind of the prick that sent you on your way. You could make the case that Arkansas game was really not the final straw, but the straw that broke the camel's back on the way out for Jeremy Pruitt, based on the way
I mean, if that was the case, they'd have fired him much sooner than January 18th, right?
But when it comes to the fork in the road, Tommy, because that was an opportunity for them. And I mean, let's just be honest. Arkansas was just an okay program this year. You had an opportunity to get it.
That second good quarter where Arkansas, you know, is it the third quarter, mm-hmm. second, third quarter? Third quarter, they laid it on them pretty good and opened that game up. But, I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying if that game is the impetus, it's the reason Jeremy Pruitt's no longer there. I just don't think you wait till January 18th to fire him.
What I'm saying is that was the game that you were either going to go one direction or the other. I'm not talking about that he was fired immediately after that game. That wasn't going to happen. But obviously, that was the opportunity that you could turn your season around, and they didn't.
They wouldn't have started digging.
That's what happened. And to me, that was a big thing. You look at his record, 16-19 overall, had one bowl win, but he had six consecutive double-digit losses. That was the first time in program history that has ever happened for the Tennessee Volunteers. You think about Philip Fulmer. He stepped down as the athletic director. Who are they going to get? That's a great question. Fulmer wants the next guy, whoever they hire, to be there the next 10 years. He is not going to hire the next coach. Whoever the next AD is, that's who he wants to hire.
I want to tell you about the new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers. They come in spicy pineapple, cucumber lime, and peach pear. They're light and refreshing and are made with zero sugar. The new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers.
Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Clay was teasing this a couple weeks ago, that Jalen Catalon had a very good chance to be a freshman All-American, but it was announced yesterday from the Football Writers of America Association that he was indeed that. He was the first Razorback FWAA All-American since Dre Greenlaw back in 2015. This is just another honor, award, whatever you want to call it, that's been given to the guy that was unbelievable in the secondary for the Razorbacks this season.
Yeah, man, you know, just can't have a sophomore slump. You hope he can build on this season and really be the guy you obviously center your defense around, but can take his game. You know, where is the ceiling? How much better can he be? Because I think we're all expecting big things. What is reasonable in our expectations of his level of play?
A topic I want to get into with Clay Henry coming up is, by the end of their careers, between Traylon Burks and Jalen Callahan, one from Mansfield, the other one from Warren, Arkansas, who do you think is going to have a better Razorback career? That's something we'll talk about here coming up. On the note of Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in the National Football League right now, this is what Andy Reid had to say yesterday about KC's QB. He's in the protocol, and we'll just follow that and see how he does here the next couple of days. Now, Carrington Harrison, who does sports radio for KC610 there, said Patrick passed, and this is from a source. He said Patrick passed all of his tests last night. He didn't actually get hit in the head, and there was a nerve in his neck that got tweaked and made him out of it. He's getting testing done on his neck/nerve today, but he did clear all tests last night. Now, I heard Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin discussing this before, talking about concussions, that when you have a concussion, mild or severe, you don't really have the mechanics to run and walk, and you watch Patrick Mahomes on his own 2 feet run off the field. Now, that doesn't mean that he still didn't have one, but based on what you heard from Carrington, based on what you've heard from the guys that have had an experience, have you ever had a concussion?
No, not that, no. But I know people that have, and they make you nauseous, they make you throw up. Woozy and wobbly is certainly what we saw of him in those moments, and they linger. You know, you don't just get over a concussion. You got to drink a lot of fluids, a lot of water to get through it. I thought the point you're making on the show, that precedes us here on the air, was a great observation, in the fact that he could run, and then he was seen running in the tunnel, I guess, as well, is a great sign, because to be able to neurologically have the balance to do that, it's a great sign that he's probably going to pass all these tests. But the world is watching. The NFL world is watching. A lot of people expect him just to be cleared because he's Patrick Mahomes, and I think that they will scrutinize a lot of things just because people expect, because of the ratings, because what's at stake, because of the winner of this game goes to the Super Bowl, he's going to somehow be automatically cleared. I think the NFL is going to be very cautious to make sure the appearance is at least that there wasn't just some kind of rubber stamp placed on Patrick Mahomes and him allowed to play.
Well, the last thing they need as a league is their best player, the face of the NFL, being pushed to come back early when he's not ready. That would be an awful look for the National Football League. So you have to make sure that he is A-OK,
optics are
ready to go, especially when it comes to, again, the face of the NFL, which Patrick Mahomes is.
You go back and you just look at it, the contact with the opponent was not nearly, was not the forcible contact. It was with the ground. And this wasn't the kind of football play or football hit contact that normally you say, oh, well, there's a concussion. This was not targeting type stuff, helmet to helmet. This was just a different kind of play that resulted in clearly his knees buckling, him being wobbly out on the field, and then shutting it down and taking him off the field, which was the correct thing to do.
Neck or nerve, as Carrington referred to, sounds more likely than an actual concussion, but in these situations,
and that can be just as scary,
Yeah, no, I don't want to downplay that, but that seems more realistic based on what we saw on Sunday than a concussion. But who knows at this point? Arkansas came in number 8 in D1's baseball top 25 poll, and they've been, I think it was Baseball America that had them at like 21. So they typically start in the top 25 in various polls, but Kendall Rogers and Aaron Fitt and those guys over at D1 have them at number 8 right now. And that's what the poll the NCAA uses for their top 25.
What Perfect Baseball had them at 22, was it? Is it Perfect Baseball a week or two? I mean, these things vary quite a bit. I'll be interested to see, when do we think we're getting the schedule? It's got to be any day now, right?
Kenna Rogers reported last week that would have been, I think, on Thursday that they were supposed to get in the next 24 to 48 hours. The softball schedule's already out. I would hope that it's by at least the end of the week, at the very latest. But
we're thinking it's a month from today is when the season will begin, February 19th. So I'm anticipating, because we do know that the AD's approved basically no changes to the conference slate, so that'll be 10 SEC weekends of three games, so 30 games there. What will the non-conference portion of the schedule look like?
Did you watch any of the Kansas-Baylor game, that top 10 matchup last night?
No, I was at a ball game myself, so I did not get to see that.
So my dad was happy with the result. Baylor ended up winning the game. Kansas did get a backdoor cover on a last-second three-pointer that was near center court. But what's interesting, now Kansas has, now they've lost a couple games. Baylor, Oklahoma State recently, they're not what people anticipated them to be. But this was a wild stat. This is the first AP College Basketball Bowl in which Duke, Kentucky, and North Carolina have been unranked in the top 25 since 1961.
Wow.
Is that 70 years? 50, 60 years? Is it 60 years?
60 years, yeah.
That is a long time. Since 1961, neither Duke, Kentucky, or North Carolina are ranked in the AP poll top 25.
Mm-mm. 60, that is an amazing number. To think that you went 60 years and at least one of those three were there.
Not this year. Mm. So both all three of those teams.
I would bet money, though, by the end of the year, one of those three are in there.
I would probably assume that you're correct. Speaking of blue bloods, Clemson is kind of the new blood, one of the new blue bloods in college football. Every single one of their defensive starters are returning for Brent Venables next season. Nolan Turner, who's, I think, second-team all-ACC safety, he announced yesterday that he is coming back. So this is unbelievable that they have every defensive starter. Now, they're going to have to replace Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. I think Justin Ross said he was coming back, who's their star wide receiver, who tore his ACL prior to this past season. So they're still going to be loaded next year, and all depends on DJ Ugalale, or however you say his name.
He looked pretty good in relief of Trevor Lawrence.
That he did.
Can you imagine being Florida State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina? I mean, you just feel like you're never going to get any relief with these guys.
Nope.
So, I mean, if you're reading this and you're an ACC team right now, you're like, golly. So, I mean, we've got someone in our company that's a big Virginia Tech guy. I'm sure when he hears that stat yesterday that Clemson's returning every defensive starter, he's like, throw your hands up.
It's got to be a little irritating.
Yeah.
Last headline for you. Pizza Hut
is different than Bama doing it.
Yeah. So. Pizza Hut is experiencing, but you bring up Bama. Bama's lost, they've lost, I think, 8 or 9 assistants.
I'm just saying it would be no different in our league than Bama doing it.
No, but you bring up that point. Did you see how much Bama's lost this year?
Well, I don't know the exact number, but quite a bit of staff, I do know.
It's 8 or 9. We brought up Kyle Flood last week. So Kyle Flood, Sark, it's like they just lost Huff. I think it's Christian Huff yesterday. They've lost an insane amount of staff, plus the players as well. You think about Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, Mac Jones, and that's just on the offensive side of the ball.
Yep.
Najee Harris. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's going to be very, very interesting and compelling to watch if this Alabama team can do it next year with the amount of talent they've lost. If Bryce Young can hold down the fort with Nick Saban and company.
We sit here and had the same conversation last year, and the offense got better. You know, they lose coaches, they lose players every year, and this year's offense was better than the previous years. So you'll go broke doubting and thinking that, oh, this is the year that Saban won't get it done. You'll go broke betting on that.
I want to see, because the Bill O'Brien hasn't been announced yet, has it? Who's the former Penn State head coach,
But at the national championship game, it was like imminent. And then you're right, I don't think anything official's been
double check on that. So I don't think I've seen that. And now he's being linked to the Tennessee job, which would be something to think about just when it comes to this discussion. Last headline for you. Pizza Hut is experiencing drone delivery overseas. They're testing this till June until they'll start doing it with actual customers. They have a, this is over in Israel, they have a limit of 5.5 pounds, which equates to two pizzas and a 2 liter of Coke. How's this going to go? Do you want
Can they keep it warm?
That's a great question.
There's some kind of box, insulated box on the bottom of the drone, or I'm interested in, because obviously if you're flying my pizza around through the air, is that thing getting cold? You know, that would be my question, is how are you keeping my pizza from getting cold? I'm sure they've got that figured out. That's my question.
I think it's a question worth asking this morning. All right, 877-3-
But that would be neat to have your pizza, you know, flown into you.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that's free delivery.
I would anticipate.
I think that's an upcharge, probably.
Just a little bit. 877-377-6963, the number to call or text in. David in South Arkansas's ears are burning as he heard us talking about Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Hey, big game this weekend in the AFC Championship, bud.
Oh, I love that sound. I love that sound. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Yes, I also just got confirmation that my tickets for the championship game have gone through. I will certainly be there. The deal with Mahomes, I was listening to 610 yesterday morning leaving KC, and like those guys were saying, you'll notice his head never hit the Cleveland guy. The guys on the radio even described it as an MMA submission chokehold almost. You know, he took him down, he had him around the neck, and his head never hit. But I'll tell you this, I have only one other time have I heard that stadium that quiet, and that was years ago when Trent Green got nailed by a Cincinnati Bengal and had to be carried off the field. But like you said, he was up, he was running. I love what Andy Reid said, quote, he passed all the bills. So I don't think it's a concussion, but also I love this, and I think you guys mentioned it. You get all these internet doctors, all the radio doctors, everybody, even Jim Nance. I finally watched the replay last night. Jim Nance, well, that's a concussion, or I've never seen one.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I don't know if that's a concussion. You don't need to be diagnosing. And all these people, well, he's going to be out a week. Well, he needs to go through this protocol. I guarantee it. They got every specialist in a four-state area up there on speed dial take care of that young man. So Lord knows he's getting better care than anybody and their brother today, all this week. What concerns me also is his toe, his left toe. You saw him gimping around a little bit. And they did have a doctor on yesterday, a neurologist, and they asked the question. Now, they have to do all these physical mobility tests. How does the toe interfere with that? You know, can he run? Can he move? Can he do all the physical stuff, all the neurological moving around? So I'll let the experts take care of it. That boy is getting better care than anybody in the world right now, I'm sure. But if it's not a concussion, okay. I'd be wobbly, too, if I had my oxygen cut off in a neck chokehold like that. You know, good grief. And it was not dirty. No, it's not cheap. I don't think anything like that at all. I'll be honest. It was just a tackle he took down. It's football. Those things happen. You know, that's just the nature of the game. But, gentlemen, it's a good day to be a Chiefs fan. And go Chiefs. Thank you, guys.
I enjoy the AFC Championship game. It's not going to be an easy matchup against the Buffalo Bills. It's going to be a fun one, though. I'm really excited to watch that.
Yeah, and to me, this is one of my two or three or four favorite sports days of the year. AFC, NFC Championship Day, first day or two of the NCAA tournament, first Masters weekend, this weekend, because you get generally the AFC and the NFC Championship games never disappoint. Rarely are both games blowouts. Rarely are they duds. It's just a great full day of pro football. It's the only thing going. A lot of times the Super Bowl will let you down, and the Super Bowl becomes about, you know, the guy that comes over to the house and gets the bowl of chili and sits down on the couch and the inning kicked off. All right, who's winning? Who's winning? You know, well, the inning started yet, sir. You know, yeah. AFC, NFC, everybody's kind of tuned in. It's real football. I like this weekend.
So who do you want to see in the Super Bowl?
it's less of a spectacle. I want to see the Chiefs because I got so many friends that are Chiefs fans. Okay. So for me, I want my fan, my friends to be happy.
Okay.
So Chiefs and probably the Packers, probably Chiefs Packers.
Okay. I was told yesterday that our Super Bowl plans are going to be at a Chiefs fan's house.
Okay.
So, and we heard from Brett Good, who we'll talk to tomorrow,
right,
720, said I could wear his jersey on Super Bowl Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Now, we play in an annual football game prior to, and out of respect, I'm not going to wear the Packers jersey to the predominant Chiefs home, but if Brett lets me, I'm going to be sporting his uniform during our football game that day. We'll see how it goes. So we'll see.
You're going to wear his jersey in the football game?
In the football game.
He's probably got enough of those that it wouldn't matter if
he lets me.
Got a grass stain or two on it.
Yeah, if he lets me, but we'll see. Hey, make sure you're subscribed to our Hit That Line podcast network. You can listen to The Morning Rush, Halftime, Primetime Preps, Hog Talk, and also Trusting the Process. Steve Sullivan is going to be joining me this week. Really excited to talk to Sully. He's a Boston guy, so we'll get kind of his timeline on how he got down here to Little Rock and started working for KATV. Tommy's got a connection. I've had a connection with him. He's just a really cool guy, and this has been a fun project thus far. The news of the day, it's Tennessee and what's going on with the Volunteers program down there in Knoxville. Now, if you haven't heard, Jeremy Pruitt has been let go. Philip Fulmer has resigned. And it's kind of a flurry and a flux. Hey, what's going on? Kevin Steele has taken over as the interim head coach for the time being. And now the question is, hey, where's Tennessee right now in the spectrum of jobs? Well, Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, he was pretty outspoken on where Tennessee is right now.
It's a program, you know, thinks of itself better than it is. It doesn't compete for championships. It last won one in 1990. It's a program, you know, thinks of itself better than it is. It doesn't compete for championships. It last won one in 1998. They won the first BCS title. They're not in an orbit with Georgia, Florida, and their division, certainly not Alabama. And I would say Texas A&M, LSU from the other side. So it has a great history, but it doesn't have a great program right now. That's not to say they can't get it back. But now you're looking at spending money to hire a new coach, new staff, trying to compete, paying all that money, and trying to get relevant in the SEC. And that's just not going to happen.
Tommy, Arkansas fans know all too well about a contract extension that was early with Brett Bielema and Jet Lawn. Well, if you remember, as of yesterday, 116 days prior, Jeremy Pruitt got a contract extension.
Yeah.
And 116 days later,
yeah,
he's gone.
Well, and now what do you do if you're Tennessee? You got to hire an AD who's going to hire a coach. What's the timeline going to be? Is this going to be a deal where both get done in rapid order? Do you already have an AD kind of picked out? Has this been going on in the background for the last week or 10 days?
Who wants that job?
I mean, if you wait around a couple of weeks to hire an AD and then it's another week or 10 days to hire a coach, goodness gracious, you're into February, mid-February maybe, before you get a coach on the ground. It's incredible. I got to believe Tennessee will move faster than that. Now, you have no AD and no coach.
You had John Curry, who I think is at Kansas State now. He got forced out by Fulmer. Now, Fulmer came and he had to resign, which is just another word. We're not going to fire him because he's Fat Phil and he did so many great things, including win a national championship for this football program. I just don't know what athletic director is going to, because, I mean, they're about to, I would think, go into some protocol from the NCAA. Like, this is from a letter that was obtained by the Athletic. The conduct by at least two assistant coaches and several recruiting staff members are likely to lead to an NCAA finding of level one and or level two violations of one or more governing athletic rules. What that boils down to is they're going to find stuff that they were cheating. And listen, if you went to Fayetteville right now, you'd find stuff. You went to Tuscaloosa right now, you'd find stuff. If you went to Gainesville, pick an SEC town. It's like the Southwest Conference in the 80s. Everyone's cheating some way, shape, or another. Now, some schools are cheating more, but it's just happening across college sports. Deal with it. But these were like pulled out of the athletic department by members inside.
Self-inflicted.
They're self-inflicted because they wanted Pruitt gone so bad that they turned on the football program and him and his staff to get him out. And the reasoning behind that and the rationale is, oh, if we find bad stuff that happens, we don't have to pay the guy. Because they're trying to, they quote unquote fired him for cause. And they fired nine other staff members for cause.
This is cutting your nose off to spite your face.
To not pay these buyouts. And they said your failures are likely to lead to significant penalties to the university that has jeopardized the eligibility of our student athletes.
If you'll remember, though, back in the middle of the season, when financially everybody was on the ropes across the sports, across the college football landscape, staffs taking salary reductions was fairly commonplace. Arkansas staff did it. Many other college football staffs took pay cuts.
Or pushed their bonuses back a year. Did just whatever
or
it took.
Both. But, Arkansas staff took cuts in their salaries. Tennessee staff said, no, we're good. We're not taking the salary cut. These were voluntary. You have a contract. But, Arkansas staff and many others said, we'll do it because this is what is good for the university, the athletic department. We're going to do our part to help out, to try to make ends meet. Tennessee staff said, nah, we're out. We're not doing that. I would imagine that you trace that back, and that is the root of where some of this real bad rub is with the administration.
Blood. And you bring
when I needed your help in the darkest hour, you gave me the middle finger.
Pretty sure Fulmer got a contract extension too and a raise, if I remember that correctly. You bring that up. Sam Pittman was, I think Bob Holt asked him about if he had to take a pay cut, and he said, well, I'm not going to voluntarily take a pay cut, but if they ask me to take a pay cut, I'm going to take a pay cut to help out these other programs, which they did. So that's the mindset. I'm not, and you and I had conversations about this when we were in the midst of really the heavy heart hit stuff of Corona. I said, if I needed to, it's what we need to do.
Yeah.
But that was the reality at the time. But I'm not going to come up to you. It's like, hey, you know what? Slash my salary in half. Slash my salary down by a fourth just because I'm doing it out of the goodness of my heart. Like, no one's going to do that. But if it needs to happen for the betterment of the university or the athletic department, Sam Pittman and company volunteered to do that. And they did. It is a Toyota Tuesday here on the Morning Rush, and really the biggest part of the conversation this morning has been on the Tennessee current job opening, not only within the head football coach, but as the athletic director, Phil Fulmer, retiring yesterday. And that's why I wanted to bring in John Reed, who hosts over in Fox Sports Knoxville. John, appreciate your time this morning. I anticipate that you've been quite busy the last couple hours, man.
Yeah, it's been a wild last 6 weeks or so, as we kind of just had a bad season end and you're waiting to see if anything happens, the news of an investigation, and then we just kind of wait and see, and meanwhile you're losing games by double digits and you're just waiting to see, and the holidays come, and then finally yesterday you see the shoe drop, and now you just wait as you are doing another double search. We did this in 2017 where we had to find an AD and a head coach, and here we are. Time is a flat circle, my friend.
So let's go back to 2017, because I think John, Arkansas was in a similar situation. Chad Morris gets hired prior to Hunter Yurecek as the athletic director, and it seems like everyone's wanting to know, not only in Knoxville, but in just the college football world, hey, who's going to be the next Tennessee head coach? Who's going to be the next head coach? Man, y'all got to find an AD first. Who are some of the athletic director name candidates that have kind of been popping out recently that you think might make a good hire in Knoxville?
Well, I'm not going to pretend to know who's going to be a good hire for the athletic director, just because we've gone a couple different routes in the past, and we had the savvy conservative guy who knows how to run everything behind the scenes, and John Perry. He was the one who let everything go off the rails in 2017. And then they replace him with Phil Fulmer, who's supposed to be the strong figurehead who can raise money and be, deal with the boosters. And obviously he was a disaster as well. But
But I think the name that people have really honed in on is John Gilbert. He's over, I believe, at ECU. He was here at Tennessee at one point. He was at Alabama for a long time. He was a part of the search in 2017. He almost got the job, or at least was interviewed for the job. Seems like that's the name that most people are looking at and saying he'll be the next AD.
John, we've had a few Tennessee fans that have called in already this morning, and a lot of them remember the 80s and the 90s. I'm sure you do as well. When it comes to the Vols now and at Kurt State in 2021, hadn't been back to an SEC championship since 2007, really hadn't had a lot of success in this 13, 12-year period. Where do you think the Tennessee football job ranks right now in the Southeastern Conference?
I mean, if we're talking about just right now, all your investigation in a 3-win season, it can't be much higher than 10th. I mean, I don't, you know, split hairs and get you an exact number, but I mean, things have been bad, obviously. I do think that there are still some coaches that are right there in the sweet spot of the, you know, in their mid 50s or so, but still view Tennessee as a powerhouse, but man, like it's, or a potential powerhouse. Let me, you know, make that clear. But it's, you know, we get further and further away from it, and people care less and less about it. Players care less and less about it. And, you know, it's different than it used to be. Everyone has money now. Everyone has great facilities. Players don't really care about when Tennessee was good. And, you know, I guess you could say that it's a little toxic up here sometimes. I mean, we have to be honest. Like, it's a weird place. You know, we weren't necessarily happy with what Butch Jones did. And, you know, we got him out of here and then, you know, proved it was a disaster. And I think it would take a certain type of coach that would want to come in and, you know, care about Tennessee. The good news I would say about this coaching search is there do seem to be a couple of coaches that would be available that, you know, have Tennessee ties or at least would view Tennessee as a good job.
Yeah. So let's go over some of those names. I mean, a name that pops up but maybe not be a timely fit would be Hugh Freeze, considering the NCAA allegations and issues going on now. That's a name we've been discussing this morning. Also, Gus Malzahn's another name. What are some of the names that have been circulating there around Knoxville concerning this job?
Yeah, I mean, you hit two of them off the top. Hugh Freeze, to me, you know, he's one of those guys who I say, you know, mid-50s, who views Tennessee as a big deal. The reports up here that Hugh Freeze, you know, views Tennessee as a dream job. That's what ESPN's Chris Lowe has constantly been saying. But I thought yesterday when the president, Randy Boyd, is talking about ethics and integrity and, you know, how Tennessee's going to stand with that, seems kind of hard to go from saying that to then trying to hire Hugh Freeze, although there are people that think that's who the money wants up here. When I say the money, I'm talking, you know, big boosters, obviously. I think the Gus Malzahn thing kind of ended when Tennessee brought Kevin Steele on board. You know, Kevin Steele is kind of he's the acting head coach right now. And the belief is that he'll be on this next staff no matter what. And he's building relationships as a player. So to me, that eliminated Gus. I don't think Gus is going to get back in bed with him. You know, then there's Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. He is from East Tennessee. He's talked about how the Tennessee job is, you know, a big deal to him. And he's coming off a National Coach of the Year. Now, granted, it's at Coastal Carolina. And he had NCAA issues in the past. But, you know, between him and Hugh Freeze, it feels like you could at least get somebody who could be good. And me personally, like, I've been thinking a little bit outside the box. Like, I've been intrigued by swinging for the fences, you know, going to get an NFL assistant coach that, you know, played at Tennessee, was a top 10 pick, won a Super Bowl, and has learned under Bill Belichick. And I've seen some former players really try to get behind Gerard Mayo as a candidate. So, like, there's a couple intriguing options out there. Which means that Tennessee will probably do something boring and just let Kevin Steele be the head coach, and we'll be on the phone again in a couple more years about another coaching search.
So what do you think the timeline is on the AD, making the move with the AD that you referenced earlier, then actually getting a coach named and in place?
Yeah, see, that's what we're all trying to figure out. I wouldn't be surprised if the AD's announced, or at least, you know, we were confident who the AD will be in the next, just call it a week. But in terms of the head coach, I don't know, because some people think that will be quick and other people think, well, we have to kind of wait to see what the NCAA is going to do in terms of these, you know, allegations, these level one violations. And I believe the last report is that there were over a dozen level one and level two violations. So we're waiting to see, does the NCAA show pity to Tennessee since they ran an internal investigation and cleaned house? Or, you know, was it so rampant and you had to fire nine people that you're like, okay, well, you guys are at least getting scholarship reductions. You guys are at least getting a bowl ban. And at that point, you know, how long does that take to decide? Because, like I said, Kevin Steele, the acting head coach, there's a scenario where he's your head coach, you know, for next year as an interim basis as Tennessee kind of resets. But otherwise, you know, maybe you get the okay and the AD looks and you move quickly and you get a guy in here in the next couple of weeks. I don't think the February signing day is that important anymore. You know, most guys get in bad, you know, get in the boat on, you know, in December. Although this year with the one-time transfer rules, and I mean, you look at Tennessee, they already have, you know, dozens of people already in the transfer portal. I would think it would behoove Tennessee to move pretty quickly.
Talking with John Reed, Fox Sports Knoxville, here on the Morning Rush. John, the question that we haven't even asked yet, when you look at Jeremy Pruitt, his overall body of work, I think it was 16-19, one bowl win. In your opinion, 3 years in, did he deserve to be fired?
Yeah, he deserved to be fired, and that's what's going to be interesting when they fight in court because, you know, Jeremy Pruitt's lawyer put out a statement yesterday saying that this was just a smear campaign, essentially, because Tennessee wanted to fire Jeremy Pruitt anyway, so they, you know, they railroaded him just to get out of the buyout. Because the truth of the matter is, Jeremy Pruitt should have been fired. You know, he lost seven games this year. I'll call it seven in a row to all male teams. The only win they had was against Vanderbilt. And, you know, 16 of his 19 losses, I believe, were all by double figures. You go back to last year, I mean, you lose at Georgia State to start the year, some point of firing then. It was a disaster. I mean, the quarterback situation handcuffed him, but at the same time, in year three, you should have a better quarterback option than what Tennessee had, you know, on their roster. I thought that it was a strange juxtaposition this year in terms of, you're not very good, you're not winning games, but you're also stubborn and not playing the young players. You know, Tennessee has a quarterback that at least some fans were excited on, Harrison Bailey, and, you know, it was like pulling teeth to get Jeremy Pruitt to play him as he wanted to stick with Garantano or Brian Maurer. So, like I said, it was, you were losing games, but also not building anything for the future. Recruiting had, you know, subsided. It was exciting in the offseason when, you know, you're dropping bags of cash off allegedly to players and getting them on board, but so Jeremy Pruitt was a failure, and he had kind of soured just in terms of his relationships with coaches, his relationships with fans, and, you know, reports are he didn't have very many friends over, you know, in the athletic building as well. So it was the right thing to do. I wish it would have happened earlier, and we didn't have to have an investigation to do it, but if you're Tennessee, at least you save some money, I guess, as you bring the NCAA to your doorstep.
John, before we let you go, I'm getting to see your old partner, Cody McClure, in Nashville this weekend, and me and him would often talk about places whenever I made it to Knoxville, where I should go eat. The one spot that John Reed has to take someone to Knoxville when they come into town, where is that place, man?
I am the last person to say that. I'm very safe with my food choices, man. I'll give you a couple recommendations of where to drink off the air, but in terms of eating, there's good burgers everywhere. That's the way burgers and chicken fingers or steak. Like, I'm easy to please. I'm sorry. I can't help you there.
nothing wrong with that at all, man. John Reed, Fox Sports Knoxville, Talk Sports 12 to 3 every single weekday over there. John, we appreciate your time this morning, and we'll see how the Tennessee Volunteers, both athletic director and head coaching position, shakes out in these next couple weeks.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I didn't have more answers, but that's the thing about Tennessee is we just kind of make things up as we go along. So you can watch the story unfold with the rest of us.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.
I have three categories that I've listed out for these SEC job rankings. Legitimate, what I think the jobs actually are in terms of the football. the college towns themselves and kind of what they provide when you go visit, mm-hmm. and then the pretty girls that reside at each town. Have them ranked by each thing. Here are my legitimate rankings, and you can pick a bone with me if you want.
All right.
I think Georgia is the best job in the Southeastern Conference. You're 45 minutes, 50 minutes away from Atlanta. That program is screaming to be taken up. Number two, Alabama. Number three, LSU. Number four, Florida. Five, Texas A&M. Auburn at six. Tennessee at seven. I have Arkansas at eight. Ole Miss at nine. Missouri at 10. South Carolina at 11. And South Carolina is so bad because of Clemson right now. That's why I have them that low. Mississippi State at 12. Kentucky at 13. And Vanderbilt at 14. Would you switch any of those?
I don't know that Mississippi State is that low based on the recruiting grounds. 12 seems low for that. I don't know really. I understand the philosophy of Georgia being close to Atlanta and its bird nest on the ground, but how you don't have Alabama one is when they've proven it and they've done it repeatedly. I would just flip-flop those two. I do agree Georgia is there, but
that just
based on results, I would have Alabama 1 then Georgia 2.
Okay.
And I'm just basing that on outcome.
Okay.
Walk me back to 3.
LSU,
yeah, I mean there's no question about that. In fact, you know, LSU may be 2A just based on because of who you have to recruit and the NFL players per capita that come out of that state. LSU might be 2A on this list. So,
what about A&M at 5? Any problems?
Who'd you have at 4?
Florida.
No, I don't have any problem with either one of those.
I think Auburn and Tennessee fans would go back and forth on this. I put Auburn above Tennessee. Any problem with that?
No, because Tennessee hadn't done it right now. Auburn is closer to the Atlanta area. I think Auburn sits in a great spot, but they got the shadow of Alabama's program, you know, cast right over top of them. So Texas A&M just ahead of them with the state of Texas and the only SEC flag to be planted in that state is a real advantage for A&M. And Florida's Florida. I mean, you talk about the pretty girl aspect. Florida's got the edge probably over everyone in the league.
They are number one. Let's go on to that one. So by the what you're referring to, this is how I have them ranked. Florida at number one, Ole Miss at number two, Bama at number three, Georgia at number four, LSU at five, Tennessee at six, Arkansas at seven, Auburn at eight, A&M at nine, South Carolina at 10, Kentucky at 11, Missouri at 12, Mississippi State at 13, and Vandy at 14. Arkansas made the top seven for this. Is there any...
You think Nashville's that bad? You've been there. I'm going to lean on you.
Vanderbilt is a different... It's just different. I'll leave it at that. It's not what you think it is. Now, Nashville is a town. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of scenery around, but as a college, not so much. But you agree? Who was it? Was it Andy that also Hodges also agrees with Florida at number one? We're talking
Florida. That's easy. That's an easy
call. Number one.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Now this is kind of a bummer because I've only been to Oxford, I've only been to Columbia, and I've only been to Fayetteville. But based on different Arkansas sports media members I've talked to, based on different Morning Rush listeners that have made the trips, here's how I would rank each SEC job by the town itself. Baton Rouge at number one. Vanderbilt, Nashville, number two. Even though that's the best city, I couldn't like put that because it's not really a college town. So Athens at 3, Auburn at 4, Fayetteville at 5. Fayetteville voted the best SEC town. I didn't want to put Fayetteville 1 because I feel like that was cliche as the Arkansas sports radio host to do that. Oxford at 6, Knoxville at 7, College Station at 8, Gainesville at 9, Tuscaloosa at 10, Columbia, South Carolina at 11, Lexington at 12, Columbia, Missouri at 13, and then dingy old Starkville at number 14.
Yeah, it'd be hard to argue Starkville belongs anywhere other than 14. So
where have you been of those?
Oh, let's say I've been to Columbia, Missouri. I've been to Columbia, South Carolina. I have been to Oxford. I've driven by Starkville, but never been to a game at Starkville. I've been to Knoxville, been to College Station. So been to a few of those. Never been to Athens, been to Tuscaloosa, Been through Gainesville on my way to Orlando for the Capital One Bowl, but not there for a game.
The one guy that I know that went to Florida said Gainesville's just like, nah. Yeah. He loved his experience, yeah. But he's just like, Gainesville, nah. It's whatever. So if Arkansas, where they reside, what I legitimately think the Arkansas job as, 8. Legitimate. Is that okay? Any problems with that, Morning Rush listeners?
I don't have an issue
okay.
with that.
By Collegetown, Fayetteville, top 5. Now, again, U.S. News voted
biased.
But U.S. News voted at number 1 in the SEC. So, honestly, I'm...
Then why are you got them at 5?
Because I didn't want to be cliche and put them at 1. I love Fayette, but I haven't...
So
and the other thing is I haven't put them all the way... I've only been to 3 of these 14 towns. Mm. So, that's that. And then...
are you basing the rest of it on? You hadn't been there.
Other people that have, okay. and there are other right. reputations of these towns. And then Arkansas, the other aspect, at 7. So 7, 5, and 8. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I mean, I think when you start trying to separate some of these things, it gets into minutia, trying to separate who is 8th, 9th, or 10th on some of these, so...
T-Time says you made one mistake. Starkville's at 15. Nowhere beats that dump. So I guess that he is...
I agree with you.
That is a town that I really don't... You know how you have these desires to go and like check the box for every SEC town?
That's not one
if
of
I
them.
If I skip Starkville, not that big of a deal.
Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.